Today, 4 o'clock, we're going to have a meeting. Well, we had that meeting today, and I know that for those of you that were not there, you may be curious to know how it went. I won't give you all the details. I will leave the elders for that. I will tell you that I do believe it was a successful meeting, and we are very grateful to our brothers who came and joined us for that. And I'm sure there will be word that will go out from the elders at some point very, very soon to let you know the results of that and what any next steps are that we're going to take. Do you have your Bibles tonight? Hold them up, please. Hold them up. Open up to Matthew 10. Matthew chapter 10, please. We're going to be there. That's going to be our primary text for tonight. And I'll grab a couple of verses in chapter 9. But tonight, just to jump right into this thing, I want to talk to... Whoop, that's not the right one, guys. We need to find, if we can find it, that's the wrong PowerPoint presentation. So I want to talk to you tonight about the mission of the church. The mission of the church is the Great Commission, right? I mean, there are a lot of things that the church is supposed to do, but we understand, we know what the Great Commission is. Matthew chapter 28, verses 18 through 20. The Bible says, Jesus records Jesus' words, "All authority has been given to me on heaven and on earth. So go, therefore, and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all things that I have commanded you. And behold, I am with you always, even to the end of the age." When we talk about outreach, when we talk about the mission of the church, this is the passage we tend to gravitate to, and for a good reason. It is where we read about this is where we get our Great Commission, where we get our primary imperative. And I think it's a great study to break down that text and for us to take a look at what exactly it is Jesus wants us to know about outreach. And there are some great lessons. Number one, we find that He is the source of that authority. Why do you do what you do? Well, because Jesus is the one with all authority, and He's the one that gave me this mission. And so anything that I do must be with the authority of Jesus. But we also find some elements, maybe, if you will, the primary thrust. What is the primary thrust of the Great Commission? It's not baptism. It is go make disciples. Make disciples of all nations. And then He gives us insight into the process. How do you make disciples? You teach them, you baptize them, and then you teach them. You teach them to observe all that I have commanded you. And then we get that great statement on the end. It's the comforting statement, is it not? "And behold, I am with you always, even to the end of the age." We get that idea that it doesn't matter where we go, it doesn't matter where that mission takes us or where life takes us, when we are going and teaching and baptizing and making disciples, when we are doing that mission, when we are taking care of that imperative, we know that Jesus is by our side. He's strengthening us and He's giving us the ability to carry on. But you see, here's the dilemma. The dilemma is that almost every church admits that evangelism is one of the least engaged activities that they have at their congregation. I mean, that's just the way it is across the board. You ask everybody, what are we not doing enough of? And almost everybody will say, we're not doing enough outreach. We're not doing enough evangelism. In fact, if you look at the records for... I'm going to make this general statement. Understand, I don't have the exact numbers to back it up, but I have a suspicion that if you looked at the majority of churches, most of their baptisms are what we would call in-house. It's the kids that have been raised. And that's fantastic. You expect those, right? And you want those. I would think you've got an even bigger problem if your kids are not obeying the gospel. But so many churches are not going out into the community. They're not getting that gospel out. So the question is, how do we address that? How do we change that within our churches? Well, a couple of thoughts for you. Number one, I think sometimes our approach is to try to hammer the commandment aspect about it. Well, God commanded it, so therefore we must go because we're commanded to go. And if you're not obeying the commandment, then there's something wrong with you because you were commanded to go. And we hammer this idea of a commandment. And don't get me wrong, that is important, right? Are we commanded to go out into all the world? Yes, we are. You can say amen to that. But in practicality, here's something I've learned about human beings. When that's the primary way that you try to approach something, that's only going to last for so long. That's only going to be effective for so long if all we do is just keep pounding and trying to guilt trip each other into the commandment of going and teaching the gospel. Because, you see, here's the thing. Here's the thing about humans. When it comes to our behavior, when it comes to things like morality or the ethics that we live by, for a period of time, I can coerce you into doing the right thing. I can put enough of a guilt trip on you for a while, and I can appeal to the idea, well, it's a command, and that will work for a period of time. But at some point, if that's the only motivation you are appealing to, it's the way human beings work, that no longer is an effective motivation. Why? Because our hearts are not in it. It's something that was pushed upon us, something that was forced upon us. And I think evangelism is the same thing, if not even more so. It's harder to coerce somebody into going out and opening up a Bible and saying, here, let me share Jesus with you. Which means what? It means that if we're going to change this process, if we're going to change this trend of churches not being out in the communities, not sharing Jesus, we need to remind each other commands, but it's not going to be about hammering the commandment aspect. We're going to have to start changing our hearts. We're going to have to start getting down inside of the way that we think and the way that we feel and the way that we process and view the world around us. Because if we don't embrace the heart and the emotion of the Great Commission, we will never be able to accomplish it consistently. So what is it that we need to embrace in our hearts? Well, I certainly suppose that there are all kinds of things that we could say, all kinds of relevant points we could make from Scripture. But I want to go to Matthew chapter 10 tonight. And I want to take a look at some principles. Okay, these are not hard and fast rules. These are principles that I want us to glean from something that happens in Jesus' ministry. And to put it in its context, this is what people often call the limited commission. The Great Commission is Matthew chapter 28. It's after the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus, as the church is going to be established in just in about a month from that time frame. And so that Matthew 28, it is the Great Commission. Go into all the world. Matthew chapter 10 is a smaller scope. It's Jesus sending out His 12 disciples, later His 12, to be called His apostles, to a limited audience with a certain task in mind. Now, you know, you can take a look at verse 1, and it says, And he called to him His 12 disciples and gave them authority over unclean spirits and cast them out to heal every disease and every affliction. And then to these 12, this is verse 5. These 12 Jesus sent out, instructing them, go nowhere among the Gentiles and enter no town of the Samaritans, but go rather to the lost sheep of the house of Israel and proclaim as you go, saying, the kingdom of heaven is at hand. Heal the sick, raise the dead, cleanse the lepers, cast out demons. You received without paying, give without paying. First thing I want us to understand tonight, that if we're going to change the hearts, if we're going to change our hearts, if we're going to change our mentalities, what are some of the things that we need to start thinking instead of what we've been doing? Number one is this. You need to start with what you can handle. You want to get out and start being effective in your community? Start with what you can handle. You know, I find it interesting that Jesus doesn't immediately tell His disciples, okay, it's time to go tell everybody that the kingdom of heaven is at hand. I want you to go to everyone you can find. Why doesn't He do that? Why does Jesus say, I want you to only go to the Jews, and I purposefully am telling you, don't go to the Samaritans. Don't go to the Gentiles. You ever wondered why He did that? Now, we can make some theological observations, and theologically, certainly he didn't send them to the Samaritans and the Jews because of his sacrifice had not been completed. Okay? The church had not begun. We know that this is going to come later as part of the church, but I think there's another practical side of this as well. Jesus is the master teacher and the master leader. Let me illustrate it by this way. Let's put it in the form of a question. What would have happened had he sent those young, green, Jewish teachers out to the Samaritans and the Gentiles? What would have happened? How would that have affected them? Now, if you know anything about the relationship that the Jewish people had with those two groups of people, you know it would not have been pretty. The Jewish people hated the Samaritans. The Samaritans hated the Jewish people. They were not on good terms with one another. And they certainly didn't like the Gentiles. They didn't like those non-Jewish people who were out there. They didn't like those Romans who had taken over their country and were forcing them to pay taxes and forcing them to do all that. They didn't like those folks. In fact, the Jewish people had gone so far that they had taken, they had overinterpreted the law to say that it was immoral and illegal for a Jew to enter the house of a Gentile. Even though the Bible never said that. That was their interpretation. That's how much they despised him. So what would have happened? There would have been fights. Those apostles, they would have been shunned. Well, they might have been received by the Samaritans. They might have been received by those Gentiles, but their own people would have shunned them. But you also think about where they were in their understanding. They would not have been ready to go talk to those people. They were still trying to understand who Jesus was and what he was doing. They weren't prepared. They could not have handled that. And so what does Jesus do? When he sends them out on this limited commission, he considers who he's talking to, he considers where their mindset is at, and he says, I'm going to give you what you can handle. You can handle talking to your own people. You can handle bringing this message to your own countrymen. And now I'm challenging you to go do it. I think in the same way this is happening to a lot of churches. A lot of times when we get ready to start, when we start thinking about our evangelism efforts, when we start trying to figure out, okay, how are we going to reach the community? We start thinking so big that we intimidate ourselves. We think to ourselves, okay, well, we've got to reach the community. That must mean that we have to reach every single person in Wilson County. That must mean that I have to be able to sit down with any given addict, any given convicted felon, any given homeless person. I must be able to sit down with any given high-end business deal, businessman, and be able to talk intelligently to every person that I find. That's what we do to ourselves. And we get scared to death. Because we realize all of a sudden, I can't handle that. But if we take a look at the limited commission, what does that teach us? And when you get ready to get out, and when you have it on your heart, when you finally decide, okay, I have got to carry the gospel to somebody, take it to somebody you know. Start with what you can handle. Talk to your neighbor. Talk to somebody that is in your same circle. That doesn't mean that you're rejecting the notion of ever going outside of that. But if you're not prepared to be able to sit and talk with that person, that doesn't mean that you can't talk to anybody. And so one of the things I think we need to do is we need to get it out of our minds that outreach and evangelism must immediately start with everybody we've never talked to in our lives. No. Start small. Start somewhere with the people that you know, with the people that you're close to, with the people that you have good relationships with. And as you start with them, you will learn along the way what to say and what not to say. And you'll be able to broaden that circle of influence. You'll be able to sit down with different kinds of people from different backgrounds with different ideas. Jesus gave us a great teaching point in the execution of this limited commission. Start with what you can handle. The second thing that I think we need to note out of Matthew chapter 10, and I actually want to back up a little bit to chapter 9. And the second point that I want us to glean is that if we're going to change our thinking about outreach and the thinking about evangelism, one of the things that we have to start doing, we must see the harvest. Look at Matthew chapter 9, at verses 35 through 38. And Jesus went throughout all the cities and villages, teaching in their synagogues and proclaiming the gospel of the kingdom and healing every disease and every affliction. And when he saw the crowds, he had compassion for them because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. And then he said to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. Therefore pray earnestly to the Lord of the harvest to send out laborers into his harvest." And it's after this that Jesus sends them out on that limited commission. Notice the big statement. I think it's one that we are all pretty well familiar with. Jesus gets down to the major heart issue that many Christians and churches face. Jesus stated that the harvest is ready, but the workers are few. We are lacking people to go out and go simply gather what is there for the taking, that is ready to be brought in. And it leads me to ask the question, why? Why are workers so few when it comes to, I mean, we have 184 people here tonight. We had close to 250 here this morning. That's not a few amount of workers, and yet somehow Jesus seems to be looking down, and it makes me wonder, is he still going to say the harvest is ready, but the workers are few? So why are there so few workers when there are so many people who follow Jesus? I think there's two major reasons. I could come up with a lot more, and you probably could too. But let me give you two. Number one, I think that one of the reasons why some people don't see the harvest is because they don't know what a ripe harvest looks like. Last year in our garden, we did an experiment. We decided we were going to try to plant spaghetti squash. I like spaghetti squash. My wife likes spaghetti squash. My boys, not so much. But we wanted to try spaghetti squash. And you know what? It worked. It started growing. And we had this vine going all over the place on our garden. And we had about three or four, ultimately, in the grand, maybe two or three. But we had some. And I don't know if you've ever noticed a spaghetti squash. It's about the size of a football if it really grows properly. But you want me to tell you what I had a hard time with? Knowing when to pick the silly thing. I'd look it up and it'd say, well, once it turns about a certain color of yellow, well, then I'd hold it up to, you know, I'd hold my phone up next to the squash. Is it that shade of yellow? And I didn't know. And we let that thing sit for weeks trying to figure out if this was ripe. Is it ready to be picked or not? And ultimately, we picked it and I think it went okay. It went fairly well. But here was the point. I had nobody to tell me. I had no real way to be able to figure that out. And I think for a lot of Christians, we run into the same problem. We hear, go out and teach the gospel. The harvest is ripe. Go reap. And we're going, I don't know what a ripe harvest looks like. We've never been taught to see people as lost. And you know, part of that comes from the fact that we live in what people have called a postmodern culture. Postmodernism is that idea that you can't come down hard and fast on anything. You must leave wiggle room for it all. And I will admit, I do think that there are some good things that have come from that postmodernism. I think it has taught us to be careful before we jump down too hard on something, that we make sure we listen. But at the same time, the negative side of postmodern thinking is that you can't come down hard on anybody. You can't say to anybody, you're wrong, because, well, they might be right. And you can't say to anybody, that's wrong to do, that's sin, you're lost, because, well, that's your faith, that's your interpretation. And when we've got people who have grown up in that, and this is the way that we tend to think about stuff, it makes it hard to even really grasp a hold of the idea that there are people who are lost. That when they die, there will be no hope for them. Their souls will be lost for all eternity. And we are the ones that hold the key to that. And there are a lot of Christians that because of the way, maybe the culture we live in, or maybe a lack of training from the church to them, they don't know what a ripe harvest looked like. But I think another reason why a lot of people don't see the harvest is because they'd rather be cleaning the house than being out in the field. They'd rather keep themselves busy by straightening up in-house than getting their work clothes on and getting out there and actually reaping the harvest. And what does that look like for a church? Here's what that looks like for a church. When we look at the activities inside of churches, and when 98% of the things that we do are only about making ourselves entertained and encouraging ourselves, but only 2% at best are actually getting out in the community, what does that mean we're focusing on? It means we're focusing on cleaning house, keeping it tidied up. I saw a statement that one church put up not long ago. The church that gathers more than it goes is never going to grow. And for some of us, that's where we are. When we think about faithfulness is all about just making sure we keep the status quo inside of these walls. And we may look out the window, but we don't see the harvest because that's not where our heart is. And if we're going to change our mindset, if we're going to change the way that we think about evangelism, then one of the thoughts that we need to change is that we need to see the harvest that is ready to be plucked, that is ready to be brought in. It's there still. People want salvation. People want direction. They want and need Jesus. The question is, will we get our work clothes on and go out there and get our hands dirty or not? The third thing I would note to you out of this is that when it comes to our outreach, I think a third principle that we can keep in our minds is this. Number three, keep it simple. Keep it simple. If you go through and you read, you know, we read through there in chapter 10, verses 5 and following, you saw where he said, go to them. I want to pick up at verse 7. Proclaim as you go, saying the kingdom of heaven is at hand. Heal the sick, raise the dead, cleanse lepers, cast out demons. You received without paying, give without paying. Acquire no gold, no silver, no copper for your belts, no bag for your journey, nor two tunics, nor sandals, nor a staff, for the laborer deserves his food. In whatever town or village you enter, find out who there is worthy in it and stay there until you depart. If you go through and you think about that for a minute, what has he called them to do? He's called them to be very, very simplistic in their lives as they go and they live this thing. Don't take a whole lot of stuff with you because you're going to be burdened down by all of those things and trying to make sure you maintain all of that. Don't worry about it. You go. Now, as I think about it, I will admit that when you start looking at that front end, he says, I want you to cast out demons, heal lepers and cleanse and raise the dead and all that stuff. That doesn't sound real simple to us, right? Because we don't have that kind of power. But if you can keep it in the context, it really is. Because what did he say in verse 1 of chapter 10? Jesus called his disciples and he gave them the power and the authority to do this. He was very specific in what he told them to do, and it was not difficult. I've given you this ability. Now I want you to go to the towns. I want you to perform those righteous deeds, and I want you to teach a simple message. What's the simple message? The kingdom of heaven is at hand. The rule of God is here. This is not an opportunity to be a big showman. This is not an opportunity for you to try to get a lot of glory by what you're going to do. And I think as churches, as modern day Christians, we need to be thinking the same thing. No, we're not going to be casting out demons and all of that, but that's not what Jesus has told us to do. What has he told us to do? Go, teach, baptize, teach. And sometimes what happens is I think what churches will do, and even individual Christians, what happens is we get these grand ideas about what we want to do, and we think so big, and we start putting all of this time and all of this money in this, and we want this big, huge production of a program. We're going to make this thing massive. We're going to get all of the city of Lebanon in one fell swoop on one weekend. Won't it be great? sometimes I think God might look down upon us and say, hey, keep it simple, folks. This doesn't have to be a big show. This doesn't have to be this huge, massive project that you work on advertising to the whole county or the whole state. It doesn't have to be that. Keep it simple. Go find the people who need you. Build a relationship with them. And teach them. Bring them into the church. Let them get to know some folks. Spend time with them. It's what I've given you the ability to do. It's what I've given you the authority to do and the power to do. But when we build it too big in our minds, sometimes we lose focus on what it's really about. And I think even sometimes what churches wind up doing is we start playing the comparison game. We start comparing ourselves to some other church down the road that is growing. And so we say, well, we've got to keep up with them. No, you don't. You do what God has called you to do. You don't have to keep up with anybody else. You don't have to live up to anybody else's standards except God. And what did God tell you to do? God said, just go. And so I think we need to change that mentality, and we need to realize that evangelism is not complicated. Outreach is not complicated. We're the ones that complicate it sometimes. And Jesus told his disciples, keep it simple, and I think he means the same thing for us as well. Here's the last point I have for you tonight. If we're going to increase our outreach, if we're going to change our mentality and start getting out into the communities more, I think the last thing that we need to glean from this text, speaking of measuring success, don't measure your success by the number of yeses and nos. Don't measure your success by the number of yeses and nos. Read with me verses 11 through 15, please. In whatever town or village you enter, find out who is worthy in it and stay there until you depart. As you enter the house, greet it, and if the house is worthy, let your peace come upon it. But if it is not worthy, let your peace return to you. And if anyone will not receive you or listen to your words, shake off the dust from your feet when you leave the house or that town. Truly I say to you, it will be more bearable on the day of judgment for the land of Sodom and Gomorrah than for that town. Now we're going to stop there in our text tonight, but I will go ahead and tell you that this point that we're making right now to not measure your success by yeses and nos, this will apply throughout the rest of this chapter. The rest of the chapter, he's going to talk to them about the ways in which they're going to be brutally punished and persecuted. How they're going to be dragged before people. How they're going to be rejected all over the place. So you're going to what are you going to see? You're going to see Jesus informing them, hey, guess what? It's going to be a lot harder than you think it is. But when I think about our desire or lack thereof to go out and evangelize or to carry the gospel, to outreach, the prospect and the reality of rejection is one of the most discouraging deterrents to outreach. We are either terrified that the person is going to say no, and that they're going to dislike us, and that it's going to enter, and then it's going to blow up that friendship. We're either terrified that it might happen, or perhaps we've tried it. Maybe we have tried to reach out and talk to somebody about Jesus, and we did this once or twice, and you know what? It didn't go well at all those first two times. It just all kind of blew up in my face. And so after one or two negative reactions, we just tell ourselves, well, I'm just not any good at that. I got to go find something else to do. Let me tell you a not-so-secret secret. There are always going to be more no's than yeses. You hear that, church? There are always going to be more no's than there are yeses. And that's okay. But that very fact is the reason why we should not measure our outreach success based upon the numbers of yeses and no's that we get. Because if that's your gauge for measuring, you're going to be disappointed. You're going to get discouraged, and you're going to think that you are failing at serving God. but you're not. I mean, think about it. We understand this concept in the business world, don't we? If you've ever tried to start your own business, or if you've ever been hired on to go out into sales, you know that when you get out there and you start trying to get your product off the ground or your business off the ground and you're trying to promote it, you know that more people are going to reject your product and your company than they're going to accept it. And even when you find a company, that's done a good job and they have some semblance of what we call financial success, there is a way of looking at it and realizing, hey, well, you know what? Yeah, you're making a lot of money, but how many thousands upon thousands of people are still not coming to your store? How many thousands upon thousands of people are still looking at the other guy's product and not your product? You still have more people saying no than you do yes. And the same holds true for church outreach. When you start looking to impact people with the gospel, there will be more rejection than there is acceptance. That's just a fact of life. I think Jesus even warned us about that. But does that mean that we have failed? Absolutely not. It just means we need to have a different standard of measure. In my mind, it's better to not even use the yeses and nos. But rather, we need to start asking the question, how many Bible studies have we had? What if we measured by how many active Bible studies we had instead of how many people rejected or embraced it? Well, we had 50 no's this year. Yeah, but we had 200 Bible studies. And 100 of those are still ongoing. They haven't even answered yet. Wouldn't that be fantastic news? Wouldn't that give you some hope? I think we need to change the way that we view success. Instead of viewing the measurable yeses and nos, let's find something different as our standard of measure. We keep asking, we keep reaching, and eventually, what are you going to find? Eventually, you will find that yes. Eventually, somebody will embrace the gospel message, and it won't be because you were so awesome at teaching it. It's going to be because their heart was ready. It's going to be because God had been using other people in their lives in order to till that soil, in order to fertilize it and to have it prepared so that when you came along and dropped the seed on it, God was able to make it grow. That's what's going to generate the yes. It's going to get the yes because they are part of those people who are in that harvest ready to be reaped if only workers would go. Now, these are just general observations tonight, church, okay? This is my thought, my take on some things that the church should probably do, or I think we need to try to give some attention to if we're going to get out and carry the gospel. Is there truly a single right or wrong way to share Jesus? No. No, there's not. Jesus simply said, go. He didn't tell you a specific way to do it. And if there is no specific way given to do it, if Jesus doesn't tell you a specific way, then there is no specific way. He said, go. And the method, he gave us the freedom to utilize all kinds of methods to be able to use. But see, here's the problem. The problem is that too many of us are just simply not going. And I think it's because certain mentalities get in our way. And I pray every day that God will touch our hearts and change our minds. That He will help us gradually learn to think differently about outreach. That He will help us see the harvest. That He will give us the courage to go ahead and start with what we can handle. That He will give us the discipline to keep it simple. And that He will give us the humility to not worry about measuring success by yeses and no, but by other things that show faithfulness instead. And that's where we're going to leave this lesson tonight. But as is our custom, we're going to offer an invitation. It may be that you're here tonight and you need to obey that gospel. You need to begin your walk with Jesus by submitting to Him in the waters of baptism. We can help you with that tonight. There may be that you have struggles that are going on in your life. There's sin that you need to confess publicly. Or maybe there's something fantastic that God is doing that you need to share with your family so that we can rejoice with you. If we can help you in any way, we're going to sing a song of invitation. Would you come while we stand and sing?